Portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello, yeah. Portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello, yeah. I love broccoli, and I love carrots too. I love it when my mama makes a lentil stew. And I like some candy, but not too overdo. Cause I really love my portobello mushroom. How about you? Singing portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello, yeah. I love my Brussels sprouts, I love my cauliflower. I love it how my spinach gives me lots of power. And I'll drink a glass of milk unless it has gone sour. But I'll eat a portobello mushroom any hour. I love celery, beet juice tastes so grand. I love eating tomatoes I grew with my own hands. And eggplants are so beautiful, but taste like squished up ants. So give me a portobello, let me do my dance. Singing portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello, yeah. Portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, portobello mushrooms. I like cremini, I got no problem with shiitake. Oh, slice it, dice it, saute it in a little coconut oil. If you really wanna know what gets me going, oh, it's portobello mushrooms, yeah.
That was KB Worley. Portobello Mushrooms is the name of the song from a CD called Greetings from Cloud Nine. During the break, you heard Medeski, Martin, and Wood from their Let's Go Everywhere CD. We're all connected, and indeed we are, and in fact, we're all connected through mycelium, according to Peter McCoy. He's our guest today on the Children's Hour. He's a mycologist, and we're talking about mushrooms. We have a few more questions from our kids' crew. Illuminata's got the next one.
How do mushrooms eat?
That's a great question. So it comes back to the mycelium. The mushroom is really kind of the end of the life cycle in a way. It's kind of like the apple on the tree, just there to more spread the spores, or we can collect it and look at it and take photos of it. How it got all the food before that is sort of how the apple tree gets its food. The roots take in water and nutrients from the soil and grows tall and large and kind of gets enough energy stored up to finally produce the apples. And with mushrooms, it's similar. The mycelium grows through the soil or grows through wood or whatever it likes to eat. And it's at the ends of all these little threads of mycelium that actually at the tips, there's special structures that read the environment. They receive signals and respond to those signals. And how it does it is it'll release digestive compounds, kind of like the stomach acid in your stomach, but different. And those go out, break down stuff around the mushroom, and then it soaks in the simple food. So it's kind of like, you know, taking a cookie, really complex thing around you, and then it releases all these compounds to break it down into the flour and the sugar and the water, the simple ingredients, and that's easier for it to take in and to use as food. So different than how we eat, it's actually one of the other big differences between plants, animals, and fungi, and almost one of the easier ways to think about them. Plants typically take sun energy, use that as a big part of their food. We eat food and then we digest it inside of our stomachs. Fungi digest outside of themselves and then they take in the simpler food.
How do fungi reproduce?
There's many different ways. It's one of the other interesting things about them. They're really complex when it gets to how they sort of adapt. You know, one of the things is why we look different than our siblings or from our parents is every new human sort of has a unique DNA, unique genetics, and it gets kind of changed around through the creation of the new baby. With fungi, there's many ways that they combine their genetics, and that makes them better able to survive in the environment. They have all these different ways to adapt and change to the world, and it makes them even stronger, and it's really interesting in a way. But for mushrooms and for molds, there's kind of two simple ways we can think about it. With molds, what's really interesting is that some of the little, say, the green spores you'll see on your moldy bread, those might not even be different than the DNA might be similar to the mycelium that's growing there, meaning that essentially the mycelium grows, it gets enough food, and then it wants to reproduce. So all it does is it sort of snips off the last little cell in the network that turns green and more hard and able to travel, and then that flies off. So there's no change in the genetics. It's really interesting. Some molds we think have never changed their genetics forever, and we don't even understand how that's possible. With mushrooms, it's a bit different. So with mushrooms, typically millions of spores come off every day. They have a lot of different types of genetics, but in a similar way to plants and animals, there's usually a pairing, and two of them need to come together to get a new set of DNA. The way that they find each other is based on chemical signals. So there's not really like a physical structure or anything like that. It's more that they communicate through chemicals again, whether or not they can grow together and be sort of mates. They actually use what are called pheromones that are similar to how humans and other animals find mates and sort of find each other. Also sort of a huge, interesting and weird concept.
Do mushrooms die in the winter? What do they do during the winter?
Well, the mushroom that we pick and eat, most of them, the softer ones, the ones that we would probably want to eat, they only live for a few days, maybe a couple weeks. And if nobody picks them, no animal eats them, they just fall over and decompose back into the soil and the bacteria eat them. The mycelium that they grew out of, though, whether that's in the soil or in the wood, that lives on. That lives for years and years and years. And every year it'll produce a new crop of mushrooms. So in the winter, how it survives is kind of similar to plants and everything else in the winter. It kind of goes into hibernation, slows down, and just waits it out until, you know, things are warmer, maybe there's more water or whatever it might need to grow another season.
Can mushrooms grow in different colors and sizes?
Yeah, that's one of the, I think, most interesting things about learning to identify mushrooms, or just developing appreciation and sort of starting to see them when you walk in the woods or even in your own backyard, is that they come in all types of shapes and sizes and colors. There's some mushrooms that are, you know, half as tall as me. Some of them can live for 30, 40, 50 years. The biggest living organism in the world is a mushroom. And it actually lives in Oregon where I live. And it's hundreds of football fields large. And anywhere, we're not really sure, from 2 to 9,000 years old. And it just keeps on growing. It's living in this forest below the soil. Every so often it'll come up, it'll eat some dead wood. And it's the biggest thing in the world.
How do you know that?
As far as I understand, they've gone to this forest. It's called the Malheur Forest here in Oregon. And they've sampled the mycelium. And they test the DNA, they figure out the DNA sequence of it, and then they compare samples from all over the forest. And, you know, they take samples from these across huge distances, and they all have the exact same DNA. And that means that it must be the same organism. And then they can approximate based on the size, how old it is because of how quickly the mushroom grows and how long it takes to grow 1 inch. And based on the size they've mapped, they can sort of turn the clock back and figure out it must have taken anywhere from 2 to 9,000 years, which is a pretty big difference. But I mean, it's a long amount of time. And again, this is the biggest organism in the world, and it's still alive. And you can go to that place. You don't really necessarily see the mushroom. It's hiding below the ground, but it will pop up and it'll fruit, you know, in the fall, and you can see it, and you can see the mushroom, you can identify it. And when I've been there, I say, I wonder if this is one of the mushrooms connected to this giant mycelial network that's, you know, so ancient.
Are mushrooms really high in protein or anything else that's good for us as humans?
Definitely. Some mushrooms are essentially sort of a superfood. They're on par with meat by dry weight with their protein. So shiitake mushrooms, they're really high in protein and also very high in vitamin D. Mushrooms actually have quite a lot of vitamin D. You can even take a dried mushroom or a fresh mushroom from the store and put it in the sun for a few hours, and that will actually create more vitamin D. They actually react to the sun like we do through what's known as melanin. It's a chemical or compound in our skin, and fungi have something similar. But different wild mushrooms, just kind of naturally, they'll have, depending on the mushroom, say vitamin C. So some mushrooms taste like citrus. They'll taste kind of like sour, like a lemon, because they have all this vitamin C in it. Some of them have vitamins K and some various B vitamins, vitamin A, which is good for your eyes, like carrots. A lot of them have minerals. So as they grow through the soil or the wood, they take up good minerals that are really healthy for us and for plants, and they concentrate it. So they're jam-packed full of really good stuff, fresh or dried.
How would you become a mycologist?
Right now in North America, in the U.S., there's only a few places where you can actually go and get a college degree in mycology. That's part of why I started Mycologos, was to help kickstart that process and to get people really well trained, so that they have a better chance of turning this lifelong passion or a newfound passion into something they can do as a living for the rest of their life.
Peter McCoy is the founder of Mycologos. It's the first mycology school in the world, and it's in Portland, Oregon. We've got links and pictures and so much more posted to childrenshour.org, including a learning guide for this episode that meets national education standards for use in the classroom. Look for Fungus Among Us. Peter McCoy, thank you so much for being with us today on the Children's Hour.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. So thankful to be here and hopefully get folks listening excited about mushrooms.
There are so many funguses that people wish were dead, but none seem to complain about the ones making their bread. You think fungi are slimy, gross, and cause disease, but what a shock when you find out they make your favorite cheese. Oh, funguses, 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 hey! Funguses are used in many, many ways. So lift your glass and together we'll say, hi to the eye, no to the old funguses, hey.
That was Richard Bull. Thanks for listening to The Children's Hour.
The Children's Hour is produced by The Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit.
You can find photos, playlists, learning guides, and activities for every episode at childrenshour.org.
Today's episode of The Children's Hour was written and produced by me, Katie Stone, with production help from Sarah Gabrielli and Daniel Lentz. Amber Scheel writes our learning guides. You can find this one at childrenshour.org. Look for Fungus Among Us.
Find our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to our patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the Children's Hour podcast.
Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.